It's cool when there's a full band up here, isn't it? It's awesome. April Lynn, thank you. I know you're there. We go. Thank you for that devotion. That brought back so many memories. When I was a little girl, in the prehistoric times, my grandparents had that very book. And I remember, we would go visit them, and I remember laying in the old days in Missouri, they had what they called the sunroom, and I would lay on the ground with my elbows like this, just staring at that book and all the pages and turning the pages. And so my first memories of art is Maxfield Parrish. But just looking at that, it evoked for me that feeling of safety and peace that I experienced in my grandparents' house all the time. And so thinking of God as a grandpa or a grandma with that book is actually, for me, a really great feeling. Okay. Hold on. Okay, I think I'm ready. Today we're in our third week of Advent, and our Advent word for the day is peace. And that's why we've got the hope candle, the faith candle, and now the peace candle lit. And one of the symbols of Advent is, of course, the growing light as we get closer and closer to Christmas Day and the birth of Jesus. This series was created with the help of The Work of the People, which is a liturgical film series, and specifically a theologian that they worked with to create their film series about Advent is Dr. Fook Liu. So a lot of what I'm saying comes from him, and if it's not from him, I'll hopefully give the credit to the other people I stole from. Well, for me, it wasn't really easy to prepare a message about peace during this time that we're living right now. And perhaps, like me, you feel overwhelmed by the many countries and places where violence has exploded into the news or has remained in the news for years and years due to war and turmoil in those parts of the world. Ukraine, oh, we're not there yet. Did I misnumber the slides, Brian? Okay. Hang on for that one. Ukraine, Lebanon, Syria, Gaza, Sudan, Haiti, Myanmar, Nigeria, just to name a few places. And so in preparation of this message, I was looking up all sorts of maps and charts and graphs about conflicts in the world today. Don't do that. Things are even worse than I knew. So then I thought, well, if you're looking for bad things, of course you're going to find bad things. Start looking for good things. But while I was looking at all of the information about the conflicts in the world today, I realized that in my lifetime, diplomacy is failing because the norm of countries seeking non-aggression has been fraying for years. And casual talk and loose talk of war and violence has instead been normalized. And diplomats can no longer count on reaching solutions. I feel for that Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. I mean, he's been traveling for 4 years, and I don't think that guy's ever been home, just trying to prevent things from happening. Where it feels like diplomacy is no longer in the reaching solutions business, it's more in the hope for the best and try to stop the worst business these days. So I said, okay, I'm going to stop looking for bad news, I'm going to start looking for good news. And that's when I saw a link to a peace map. And I thought to myself before I actually looked at the map, oh, that's going to be a lot better. But what you're seeing there is the status of peace in the world in 2023, and green is really good, so yay Canada. Yeah. And by the way, we just got back, you know this because I bring it up all the time now. We just got back from a trip, and there were Canadians on the trip and us Americans on the trip. It was before the election, us Americans on the trip. Some of us were suggesting that we might move to Canada, and they're like, mm-mm. No, no, you stay there. You stay in America. But you can see all the places, and I was very much surprised to see how the United States was graded as not very peaceful. I mean, I know that, but I didn't think compared to other places we were, but according to whatever these people are, and I didn't do my homework, I don't know who IEP is, but I'm going to guess that April Lynn's going to look it up right now, because that's my girl.
Based in Canada.
Yeah. But anyway, what did you say?
They're based in Canada.
Oh, that was good. Oh, gosh. Okay. So, what is it about us, or what is it within us that leads to all this conflict or this lack of shape, this lack of peace? This conflict is global, it's political. You have family conflict, I have family conflict, there's neighborhood conflict. Church, temple, mosque conflict. And often it is about power or access to power, especially countrywide. Whoever wears the crown can remake the world to their liking. And access to power gives the person in power all kinds of access to coercive measures that take way less time than diplomacy, and are much more satisfying to the person in power than diplomacy, negotiations, or compromise. And of course, now we are all in different countries, we're fighting over access to resources. Countries need access to water, to oil, to rare minerals, to some kind of cash business like diamonds or transportation routes. And it appears as if the world seems to operate from a scarcity mindset instead of an abundance mindset. But often, the problems arise because of the way we as individuals or countries interact or engage with the world. Gareth Higgins, he's been mentioned a few times here. Years ago, Gareth Higgins actually came to us in our previous iteration, the Ventura Vineyard. He's a friend of Jeff Hamm. They went to school together in North Carolina. Gareth is Irish, and pretty much you could read the phone book with Gareth's accent, and I would be like all in because he has the greatest speaking voice. But anyway, Gareth is a very creative person, a writer, a Christian, and he also, when he lived in Ireland, he and Padraig Tuama, another Irish theologian that we reference up here, influential in the peace process, in negotiating peace in the time of troubles in Northern Ireland. So he's definitely worth listening to and reading. But Gareth Higgins says a lot of the problems that we have in the world are because of the stories that we tell ourselves. That these stories, they operate in the background, and they affect how we perceive and interact with the world. And here's a list of some of the stories that Gareth says are operating in the world today. Winning is everything. Get as much as you can, keep as much as you can, and give some away for the sake of your conscience. Or the past is a list of honorable military victories in which ultimate force was used to overthrow ultimate evil. Some of us tell ourselves there's nothing most of us can do to change things. Some of us tell ourselves that people engaged in peacemaking are either naive and unrealistic or so heroic and unusual that their actions can't be emulated. Some of us tell ourselves that religion and politics are about moral purity, community boundaries, and being right. And some of us tell ourselves that violence is helpful because it brings order out of chaos and can literally redeem things. Perhaps as you heard those things, you thought of things that are happening in the world. And maybe some of them actually resonated with you either like in a really positive way, because I mean like positive in that I think I'm pretty sure that I believe that people engaged in peacemaking they can't be emulated. I think it must be too, in my heart of hearts, I think I really do believe that, and that's why it prevents me from engaging in peacemaking. But anyway, Gareth says these are broken stories. And he actually calls them, these are lies. These are lies that we tell ourselves. And he says we need to live into a better story. For us, this time of year, the better story is the Advent story. Why? Because we find these, or some of these, broken stories in the Advent story. And the Advent story pushes back against these broken stories. I have a lot of text on the slides today, and I apologize, but oh well. So here is our very non-peaceful Advent story for today. It's a lot of text, so take a deep breath. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him.' After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him.' And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.' Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all the region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. This was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more." It's a tough, tough story. Maybe you could hear some of the broken stories that are in this text. There are so many stories that could easily come out of today's headlines. Children killed in the Middle East. Families flee, become refugees to find safety. Government condones military force to eliminate threat. It wasn't very peaceful when the Prince of Peace was born. The cycles of violence and oppression in our world are certainly not new. Over and over again, societies have chosen to organize their lives through systems that violate the dignity of the poor, crush the oppressed, and execute the dreamers who find the courage to live in the possibilities of another world. During the time of Jesus' birth, the Roman Empire enjoyed a very long time of relative peace, over 200 years. Historians call it the Pax Romana, which of course is Latin for Roman peace. And although the Pax Romana is a lovely phrase, it was not a great time to be an average person. Because of course the Romans created peace by conquering troublesome people and taking their land, executing rebels, maintaining a military presence in every province, and requiring everyone to follow Roman law, speak Latin, honor the Roman gods, support the Roman temples, and pay Roman taxes. Essentially trying to make everyone the same, reducing differences or eliminating differences. Okay, for you history buffs, here's an interesting fact. In all of the Roman Empire, through all the years that the Roman Empire existed, only one group of people was granted a religious exemption, meaning they did not have to worship the Roman gods or show up in the Roman temples. And that one group through Romans history were the Jews. The Jews had proved through the decades that they were intractable, stubborn, and they would never, ever, ever worship a Roman god, and they would die in order to prove that point. And the Romans gave up. There was no Roman temple in Jerusalem until after the sack of Jerusalem in 870 AD. Okay. But I think, and I didn't work this into the message. No, never mind. Don't ad lib, Catherine. You will. Don't do that. So the Romans wanted to eliminate or reduce differences. And perhaps you see a corollary in today's world. In this country and many other countries, there are often efforts to eradicate differences. We might use different language, reframing these efforts as solving an economic problem or a public safety issue or a moral issue or keeping the kids safe issue, especially in libraries and bathrooms. But in reality, says Fuglu, our theologian, we are discouraging differences by oppressing, rebuking, legislating, or banning those who are different. And that is a broken story. That is not the way of peace. I'm sure you all remember our Shalom series, and we've actually referred to it many times since we had that series. But Shalom in the Hebrew is a Hebrew word, and it's often translated as peace. And this peace is not the peace as in an absence of conflict. Or maybe I should say that an absence of conflict is not the only meaning or the only way to describe shalom. Primarily, shalom refers to is a word that refers to wholeness, restoration, well-being, completeness. And the Prince of Peace came to rekindle shalom in us, including repairing and restoring our relationship with God. And you will notice as you read the Gospels, and I hope as you've heard us talk about the Gospels, that Jesus never tried to make people the same. He accepted them where they were, as they were. And the Prince of Peace shows us we are all each valuable. I'm going to return to the portion of Scripture that I read earlier, the really sad part. Brian, it might be slides 12 and 13 if I did this right, but it's just a little bit. Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious and sent and killed all the male children. In Bethlehem and in all that region, who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more. It sounds hopeless, doesn't it? It sounds just so horrible. But there's a but here. The gospel writers and Paul in his letters, they used a literary convention that we are not familiar with. It has a name, but of course, now that I'm pushing 70, I forgotten it. I just saw a show about old people, and it was with Ted Danson. It's called Inside Men. If you're in my age, he talks about how people my age, we can't remember the nouns. None of the nouns are available to us anymore. None of them. I can't even remember my kids' names or my grandkids' names. All right, so this technique, this literary convention has a name, but I don't know it. We talked about it when we did the Ephesians study. It came up in the Mark study. But at any rate, the writers of the gospel, they would quote texts from the Torah or other writings. So that part, Rama, weeping, is from the Old Testament. But they didn't quote the entire passage because their audience was so biblically literate, they only needed to quote a few lines, and then what would come to mind would be the rest of the passage. And so we see this as a hopeless passage, not that we're biblically illiterate, but most of us don't have the Torah memorized. But it is not a hopeless passage. Matthew is trying to tell us something, there's something bigger going on here. And so I'm going to use the root words of Drew G.I. Hart, and he is part of the Lived Theology Project. So this is slide 50. Oh, thanks, Brian. He writes, at a quick glance, this might feel like a passage of despair, but a careful reading reveals the true hope Jesus provides for us. This passage is quoting Jeremiah 31:15. In the original biblical context, this verse of lament is actually situated in a passage steeped with a dramatic proclamation of hope that God is about to do a new thing, which will restore God's people from exile and distress. In the broader passage that sandwiches this one, God commits to a coming time when the children of God will be rescued from oppression, returned to their land, and rebuilt as a people. All of this flows out of their humbly walking with God through faithful repentance. This is hope in God's shalom, the restoration of God's people living into their calling with one another, with their Creator, and with the land. Matthew wants us to see that peace, shalom, is present even when we can't see it. God is there, God is here, Emmanuel, God with us. In a deeply complicated, conflicted time, he was there in that tension and conflict. And he is here now with us in the tension and conflict in this world. When we think of peace as the absence of conflict or the absence of violence, we make peace way too passive. Peace is not the absence of something. Peace is the presence of something better. Something that makes complete, that restores. And we know this because there's nothing passive about the Prince of Peace, whose birth we celebrate this time of year. Jesus was a disruptive presence. He confronted injustice, he included the excluded, he disrupted the cycles that oppress and take away flourishing, and he invites us into this process. Blessed be the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. He showed us how to do it. He embodied peace. As Fuglu writes in his introduction to his book, Jesus of the East, Jesus, the Palestinian Jew and itinerant teacher who healed the sick and preached a message of resistance against the political and religious status quo of his day, the one who lived among the poor and outcast and criticized the established religious order for demonizing and segregating the most vulnerable and those in need, Jesus, whose life is marked by sorrow, pain, poverty, empathy, and struggle against the forces of this world. This Jesus is difficult to follow because he does not provide practical advice such as guidance for families or for finance or family life. He's not a teacher of Christian self-help or systemized theology. He is the rabbi of the oppressed and shunned, the physician of the uninsured, the liberator of the incarcerated, a living, breathing, hurting person whose life and thinking are foreign to much of Christianity in the West. Yet I cannot help but see this Jesus among us, among the poor and disenfranchised, among the outcast and wounded. I see him in the acts of kindness, empathy, and forgiveness that occur when people grapple with their own brokenness and seek also to provide healing for others. I have seen this Jesus in our communities and have witnessed the ways in which he brings healing to our divisions, how his vision for humanity helps us to see ourselves, each other, and the world differently, and how he offers the ability to sustain this form of existence. This Jesus provides a promised peace beyond the mere cessation of conflict, a peace that is summed up in the word shalom. Advent is about the coming of God into our world, about the better story. Advent is about how we walk in the world with empathy, compassion, kindness, and courage. We walk in hope, in faith, in peace, and in joy as we live into the better story of God with us. Advent is about coming, but it also reminds us of our own coming and going, about journeying towards new horizons of wholeness, making the road by walking, embodying Advent as angels of Annunciation and agents of shalom, which makes us salt and light in the world. The band can come up now. And I'm going to read, as they do, a blessing that was written by Phuc Lu, a blessing of peace to embrace the tension and discover the peace within. May the peace of Christ hold you in the tension between difference and unity. May you find the courage to embrace the conflicts within and around you, trusting that in this tension, true peace is born. As you journey through this Advent season, may the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, guard your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. Go forth in peace, trusting that you are held by the one who reconciles all things.